couple of confessions to start off with. This message was given 2 months ago to our men's group, so sorry about that. You got to hear it again. We have some slides this time. Last time I just spoke. It's a little longer today, a little more background. The other confession is, right before we started, my computer didn't work. And so, luckily, we're trying something on the other computer, but I'm so used to having, I teach at the university, I'm so used to having my laptop right in front of me, looking at it as I go through it. Now I'm looking back here at the screen, so bear with me if we have some glitches, just because we moved from PowerPoint to, what's the Apple one? Keynote. So, there's always a few glitches, but I think it'll be okay. As I mentioned to the group, the men's group a few months ago, in giving this message, I have sort of the luxury when I speak, because when Mike speaks, he's usually going through a series of things that we've talked about. It may be really important for us to hear. When I come up here, I can pretty much say whatever I want. I mean, I can talk about whatever going on. And for me, it's usually what's happening in my own life. So today, the verses today are something that sort of spoke to me in a time of quiet time. I said, you know, this would be good to talk to the men about. And then after Mike said, could you speak maybe in August, I said, you know, that might be good to talk about to our group here this morning. So that's a little background. The passage today is from Hebrews 12, 1 through 3. It's three verses, but there's a lot in those three verses. If you look at your handout, that's pretty much all of the verses there. And we're going to sort of break them down into pieces. So let's read it together. Actually, also I have here, I got used to this clicker. Developing mature Christ followers. Mike points to it every day. I mean, every Sunday. And that's really about this passage today. And what we try to do every Sunday is to be speaking of things that really can help us grow and mature in Christ. Okay. It's doing it automatically. That's good. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Okay? I have two questions I'm going to start with. I think they're important questions to sort of frame a little bit and speak to sort of the passage this morning. And the first question is, do you know of someone who once was greatly devoted to Christ? Okay, someone you knew. And their love for him, their steadfastness in service, loving the things of God and warm-heartedness to his calling in their lives, but now has drifted far from that love and devotion. Do you know of anyone like that? Sadly, my time in ministry over the years, I've known too many fellow elders, deacons, people you would think have it all together, right? Missionaries who were called and all of a sudden basically turn from serving him or just sort of get to a point of, you know, is it worth it? Tired, weary. So I want you to ponder that for a minute. That's an easy question for some of us that know individuals come to mind. The second question is a little harder, maybe. What are the situations, circumstances, or conditions of life that cause you to become weary and lose heart? That cause you to drift away from God's calling on your life and keep you from serving Him wholeheartedly? And we need to seriously think about this question, because this is the question we have to ask and answer, because generally this is what precedes, the issues that is causing this is precedes this other sort of drifting problem that we'll talk about in a minute. Okay? So what are those things? Circumstances, conditions. So one is we need to look at the background to the three verses today in Hebrews to understand a little bit about what's being said while looking at the background of how Hebrews is written. And Hebrews addresses some of these questions. Okay? So one is, who is it written to? Who is this group of believers? And this is what it says. He says, remember those earlier days after you had received the light, when you stood your ground in the face of suffering? Sometimes you were publicly exposed to insult and persecution. At other times, you stood side by side with those who were so treated. You sympathized with those in prison and joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property. because you know that you yourselves had better lasting possessions. Well, I don't know about you, but this sounds like a pretty devoted group of people. And yet, all of Hebrews, he begins to sort of give these exhortations to this group of people who were like this. Can you imagine? Joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property. I don't know about you, but if somebody came into my house and took my things, or took my own home, I don't know if I'd be joyfully accepting that. But this was a group of people who were so highly devoted, they were, and the persecution was so great, that they were willingly and joyfully saying, okay, take it. You have to take it. Because I have better possessions somewhere else. So what struck me about this verse is that this was a highly devoted, again, initially, a highly devoted group of people. They were serving God. Look what they were doing. You know, publicly exposed to insult. Side by side, those were treated. So again, getting back to that question, you know, what causes us? What are those conditions? The very first part of Hebrews, he talks about this. He says, we must pay careful attention, therefore, to what we have heard. In other words, the truth that they had learned. And he starts off talking about angels and the supremacy of Christ and who Christ was and the importance of who Christ is. To make it clear to them, this is who Christ is. This is our knowledge. Okay? So that you will not drift away. What's interesting, I made that highlight bigger, the word drift. It's the only time in the New Testament that we see this word in the Greek, drift. And basically what it means, if you're a boating person, it means you're in your boat, you come into a port of call, and mooring is where you tie your boat up, right? And let's say you forget to tie your boat up, or you tie it up real loosely. Or the other thought is, you forget to drop anchor. That's the picture they have. And what usually happens when you don't do that, if you've ever been in that situation, I think I have a picture that comes out. Should come out. Here. Oop, doesn't stay there. So somebody drifting, believe me. I won't click anything. Yeah, there he is. Yeah, you can see it. I can't see it back here. But I mean, this whole, that's the picture that the author wants you to get when he's talking about drifting. Okay? You wake up, let's say, the next morning, you look around, and all you see is open sea. That's the picture he wants you to get because, again, they didn't pay careful attention to the truth. Okay? And then he goes into a lot of verses, a large part of Hebrews, about who Christ is. He just talks about that. He talks about his obedience through being in suffering. Although he was son, he learned obedience from what he suffered. The Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being, sustained us by his powerful word. So he wants to make it very clear to the Hebrew audience that this is who Christ is. I want you to be very clear on who he is. Okay, that's the beginning. Therefore, holy brothers who share in the heavenly calling, fix your thoughts on Jesus. And fix your thoughts, we're going to see that word happening again in our primary verses. On Jesus, the apostle and high priest, which he goes into detail about the high priest, whom we confess. So he's giving the background. And then he goes and talks about hardening of hearts. The hardening of hearts, okay? He says, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. And he repeats this in three different occasions. In 3:8, 3:15, and 4:7. What's interesting, though, he's quoting from Psalm 95, 7 and 8. So he's making it very clear, a verse they probably understood and realized as he said those verses. They go, okay, I have heard those verses in the context of Moses and some others, and they understood that verse, okay? And he goes in to say, what's causing this hardening of the hearts with you group, just this group? He says, see to it, brothers, that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God. Now, this is that same group of people we just talked about, that he's saying these words, he's saying, like, hey, it's pretty heavy to talk to a group like that about hardening of their hearts. He goes on to say, but encourage one another daily as long as it's called today. And so we have a responsibility to each other that are going through sort of this drifting to encourage one another. Hey, you know, persevere, hang in there. So that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. Wow. Begin to see the relationship between sin and deceitfulness. Get into that in more detail in a minute. Okay? And then he goes in, as he moves through here, as again, preparation to the verses, a call to persevere. He He's telling the group, hey, I understand the persecution you're going through. I understand all this. He says, so do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. In fact, it's right after he talks about who that group is. He says, do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You need to persevere so when you've done the will of God, you will receive what is promised. There's something promised to them. We'll see in a minute, too. And then finally, the chapter before our verses, he talks about this faith and action, this relationship between faith and action. And of course, we know that in chapter 11 is sort of the Hall of Fame chapter of all these great men and women of faith, Hebrews 11. And he defines what faith is for this group. You'd think they would know it, but he defines. He says, now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. So if we look at this sort of little formula I have up here, so we look at chapter 11, by faith, and he says by faith, and he puts a name in there, and they did this, or this happened, okay? And he just goes through all of these different names. We don't have time, obviously, to go through all of these, but he goes through every one to make it clear to them. Sorry about moving through here. He makes it clear to them that these were the people that something happened, okay? And he says, I do not have time to tell you about Samson, David, all these different others. He didn't have time to tell about all the others, but he goes into detail the others, okay? Who through faith, and then he says this, conquered kingdoms, administered justice, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle. Well, I'm thinking, that's pretty cool, man, that faith by those individuals, look what happened. That faith, there was a result from that faith. But then he goes on to the second part of this. Okay, others were tortured and refused to be released. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put into prison. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskin and goatskin, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. So we have two sides of it. Wonderful, great things that were happening. But look what happened to them. Okay. So it's fun reading the first part, but the second part's a little more uncomfortable. Okay, in terms of, and he's making a point to them, look what they went through. These were all commended for their faith. Okay, God had planned something better for us so that only together with us would they be made perfect. In other words, this is the verse right before our verses, and I think it's important that he gives all of this background, before he says and goes into our verses. And what he does, he gives a picture of this race, this athletic event that's taking place. And pictures are really important in the scriptures because they help clarify, make vivid, something that may be very deep or hard to understand, but pictures, analogies, figural language, all helps us, metaphors, helps us to understand something that's very difficult to understand without those. And he uses this idea of a picture of a race, which we'll go into. Therefore, is how he starts the first verse. Therefore, and when there is the, therefore is there, you have to ask why is it therefore, right? So it's really important, that word therefore. He says, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. Now that's strange. Again, look at these words, cloud of witnesses. What does that mean? Well, a couple of things. And if you can see here, yeah, comes up. This is a stadium in Rome, which if you've been to Rome before, this is not there anymore, but the Piazza Navona is there, is the great Piazza Navona. But at one time it was an athletic stadium. Okay, and the picture here of the cloud of witnesses is that as the runner comes into this arena, he looks up. And he looks up into the stadium, and what does he see? All these people, right? But what he's noticing is what the people that he's looking at are former Olympiads, former winners of races, which are the individuals that he just spoke about, all the men of faith, all the women and men of faith that have gone through this process of living out their faith. And so since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, and again, I think I have this, it gives us inspiration, knowing they were the former winners. They're the ones are there watching us. They're the ones that are sort of witnessing what we're doing now. And the thing that, again, to take away is others have done it, and so can you. And that's what they're saying to the individual. You know, you're surrounded by all these individuals, men and great women of faith. You're surrounded by them as they're witnessing you in your own race. Then it goes on, let us throw off everything that hinders. Okay, now, if you're running a race in a robe, you can't go very fast. In fact, they didn't run Olympic races with this kind of outfit, right? Right? What they wore is that. Hardly anything, right? And the reason they did is they could run quickly. And so everybody understood that when he says, throw off everything that hinders. In other words, discard weighty non-essentials, the things that are sort of weighing us down. It's not sin. It's just stuff that's sort of like in our lives that's keeping us effective in terms of running that race. I was doing some research for my students because I was giving a lecture on this. And I looked up the average amount of time individuals in America spend on their, I don't have my phone, but on their phones, computers, or television. You know how many hours a day is the average? 10 hours and 39 minutes. The average amount of time Americans spend in front of those media devices. If you think about it, how many hours are there in a day? There's 24 hours a day. I'm sleeping maybe 8, 5, 6, whatever hours you sleep. You take away that, it leaves you a little fraction of time. We've got to eat. There's very little time left to do anything else. And so wonder, you know, are we overweighted with certain things in our lives that are sort of like, wow, are these non-essentials? Are they non-essentials in terms of me fulfilling what I need to be doing? Okay. And this is the obvious. When the sin that so easily entangles, in other words, it gets you tripped up. And so the question we all can ask, what trips us up? What are the things in our lives, we can answer each of those individually, what are the things that keep me from running the race? The things that hinder me and all those things that just sort of, the sin that sort of keeps me falling, tripping. And let us run with perseverance. Wow. If you've ever been in an athletic event, it's not easy, right? I can't think of any athlete who says, oh yeah, that's just so simple, it's so easy, I just run. If anybody runs marathons or runs races, I can see a couple of people in here, I know you run marathons, or triathlons even. It's not easy. A race is tough. In fact, at the end of a race, if you've been in a marathon, towards the end, what happens? Anybody's been in a marathon, what happens? Dave? You want to give up. And the writer knew this. They knew these runners. They know what they're going through in a race. It's not something that's foreign to them. And if you know, if you've been in a marathon, you're running a marathon, it's that last leg of the journey, and you're like going, I am dying. My body cannot do this. And he says, run with perseverance. It's not easy, the race we're in. You know, we face suffering, conflict, physical ailments, whatever. It requires patience, endurance, persistence to be in this race. It's not easy. The race marked out for us, and this is an interesting one. The word race here is A-G-O-N, agon. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. I'm looking back at Matt to see if he understands it, but it means, think of the word agon, it means, we get a word from that, agony. The word race there that we see as a race actually means extreme struggle. Extreme effort. Okay, the race marked out for us. What's also interesting, it says marked out for us. It's an individual race that is specific to me and you and you. Each of us have a specific race that's our particular race, our particular hurdles, our particular pull, or whatever it is. It's our particular race that God has marked out for us. Okay. So it's interesting. My race is different from yours, but each of us have that individual race. It's our personal mission for Christ. That's what God has called us. What is that race that God has called us individually? And again, everyone is different in that particular race. And it's purposed by Him, that particular race. Then it says, fix your eyes on Jesus. Okay, how does this have to do with the race? Now, if you know, if you've seen this on television at the Olympics, you're watching the Olympics, and what happens when a runner is running and he does this? What happens?
Slow down.
You lose focus. And that's what they're talking about here. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus. The idea that at the end of the race we have Christ, our goal. And what causes us to lose that focus of the direction we should be going in? What causes us to do that? You know, not being distracted, What do we focus on? What is our focus? What is keeping us or distracting us from the goal of Christ? Okay. The author and the author and perfecter of our faith, and I bolded faith there, made it larger, simply because, again, that's what preceded this passage, all this great message of faith. You could go, man, I don't have the faith, man. I don't have faith like these guys. And he's talking here, he says, look at the author and the perfecter of our faith. He is the author. He is sort of the model for us, how he lived his life, how he died, how he ran the race. And the other, our perfecter, he's like the coach. He is our coach at the end of that race that we look at, who has trained us or shown us through his word, through his life, how we should live our lives. So it's a picture of that in terms of the author and perfecter of our faith. He ran the race. He's our coach, our inspiration, what he has done for us. Who for the joy set before him? They both came up, but that's okay. I'll leave them up there. This is the verse that actually had me come to this particular passage, because I was reading this in my own quiet time, and I read this, for the joy set before him endured the cross. And that just really bugged me. Here he's on the cross. We understand the pain, the excruciating physical agony, right? Who for the joy set before him endured the cross. And I had to try to understand what that joy meant. And obviously, as it says here, the joy was, he was looking beyond that moment to being with his Father, to be in the presence of God. The other thing that was so fascinating to me that I realized, that the other joy that was set before him, that goal, that prize, that trophy, in other words, the runner's looking for, it's a competitive thing. I want to win the prize. I want to win the rewards, right? But the thing that was the joy for Christ was not only to be with his Father, but the joy that he was getting knowing that the world would be different, that he would be changing because of his sacrifice for us, that our lives would be changed. So he looked at Mary from the cross, or he's looking around, I can imagine, that salvation was coming to them, and that was what brought him joy. Changing other people's lives. Again, he endured the cross. He wasn't focusing on temporal sufferings. In other words, what he was going through at that very moment. He was looking for an eternal reward. The eternal, again, reward of what he was about. Scorning its shame. Basically, the cross was an emblem of shame. But he scorned that because his resurrection from the cross. He had victory over rejection and contempt that people had for him. His own father had rejected him during that part. Right? Remember, but there was victory because he overcame that. And again, there was the promise, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Promise fulfilled. Honor and authority. There was the reward. He was with his Father. He was with God. And so the author then says, okay, here's all the stuff I've given you. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men. Consider what he just went through, okay, in his race. Then carefully meditate, examine his life, what he did, how he lived his life, how our momentary sufferings, conflict, strife. And he ends this, again, of these three verses with this, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. And that's why I came to these verses too, was this whole issue of weariness, okay? There are times, I know in your life and my life, there's times where, wow, I'm losing heart. I'm getting weary. And the author is saying, again, look at this. Look at your race. Look at, consider what he went through. Consider your model, your coach, the race you're in, so you will not grow weary and lose heart. Again, it's remedy for soul fatigue. Not physical fatigue, but soul fatigue. Just get to a point where you're just like, and a lot of these friends that I've known that have sort of drifted away, some of it was caused from soul fatigue. Just weariness, worn out, from serving God or for whatever happened, circumstances, loss of a loved one, something happened and just they were weary and lose heart. So how do you see the race you're in? You know, the individual race you're in. I look at my race, the one God's called out for me. How do you see the race you're in? Okay. What is that race? And the second question, what is the joy set before you? What is the joy that you have? Being with the Father, being in His presence, but also seeing lives change because of how you live your life, how you communicate with others, what you do in terms of your work, how you live your life. That should give you joy because you know you're influencing and having a say and sharing the gospel, and that's why these cards are important. Because that's the joy we have, the joy of seeing these lives changed because of Christ. Goes on to say later, let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for He who promised is faithful. Let's pray together. We bow our heads. And I'm going to pray the prayer that's actually the very end of Hebrews. It's paraphrased a little bit to apply it directly to us. And it's a prayer of just, you can see his heart, the writer of Hebrews, his heart as he prays this prayer. God of peace, who through the blood of the eternal covenant brought back from the dead our Lord Jesus, that great shepherd of the sheep, equip us with everything good for doing your will. And may you work in us what is pleasing to you. Through Jesus Christ, to whom be glory forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Amen.